Welcome to High Cheese. It's Friday, May 10th, 2024. And it was a good week for Donald Trump. It was a really bad week for the corrupt Biden administration and the corrupt Department of Justice. Down in Mar-a-Lago, Judge Eileen Cannon has indefinitely postponed Trump's document case. Now, I've mentioned previously that the Trump's attorneys have petitioned Cannon to throw the case out based on the Department of Justice not fairly applying the law. And they cite Joe Biden not being indicted for taking top secret documents. And they also cite Mike Pence not being indicted for taking top secret documents. But they're going after Donald Trump. And Cannon also found out that the Jack Smith, the lead attorney going after Donald Trump, has misled the court. They made several claims about what were in the boxes. And they kept on changing. One day it was one tranche of boxes and documents that they found, and then later they changed it. They thought that the judge wasn't going to really take a look at this, but she took a look at this and said, well, what's going on here? You tell us that they found this, these documents, but then in a subsequent petition, they say, oh, no, it's changed. Well, that's not how the law works. And then you add on to the fact that Cannon was aware of these other documents that show the coordination among the Department of Justice and the White House with this prosecution. So what I think is she's just setting this up for an eventual dismissal because she sees what the Department of Justice is doing. She knows this is a weak case, and she knows that this is just a persecution of Donald Trump. Now, remember those original pictures that the FBI and the Department of Justice released to the people? They showed boxes of documents, and then they showed strewn all over the place these documents that had top secret on top of it, and made it appear that these were all top secret documents that they found. Well, guess what? It was staged. And we all knew that. And the judge is figuring this out also. So the likelihood of this ramping up before November's elections is rare. And it may be dismissed beforehand, but I think Cannon is setting this up to be a dismissal, which is justice, because Trump is not getting a fair shake here. It's selective persecution, and she's on to them. Now let's go back up to New York City with the Bragg case, the Stormy Daniels case, as the press likes to say, the hush money case. And this has nothing to do about hush money. It's an accounting issue. And all this is an attempt to smear Donald Trump as well as election interference. Now, Stormy Daniels took the stand this week, and there was really no reason to put her up there. Because it's not an issue of whether Donald Trump slept with her. And quite frankly, I don't think that he did. She's not Trump's type. She's a porn star. And Trump is a notorious germaphobe. And I just don't see a germaphobe trying to sleep with a porn star. With unprotected sex. Sorry I have to talk about this, but this is what they're trying to do to Trump. And again, this is just an accounting issue. It has to do with whether Trump paid this hush money, and he's saying he didn't. He didn't know anything about it. He's saying he never slept with Stormy Daniels. So why did they bring her up there? Again, it's just to smear Donald Trump. Because the crux of the issue has to do with this convoluted law that they created in their mind. They're trying to jump through hoops to create some kind of new law in order to get Donald Trump. So it's an accounting issue. It's not a Stormy Daniels issue like the press wants you to believe. And like I said, they're claiming that Donald Trump paid hush money to Stormy Daniels, and they paid it through his company, through legal bills that Michael Cohen, the convicted felon, paid to Stormy Daniels, and then he submitted bills under the guise of legal expenses to get reimbursed for the payment he made to Stormy Daniels. Now, even if it was hush money, and that's what this case is about, hush money is legal. There are many extremely wealthy people that do this. People get accused of a lot of things, but they just pay it. Just shut up. I don't want to hear it. Go away. Here's $150,000. And that's legal. But Trump said he never slept with her. He knew nothing about any of the payments. And quite frankly, it does not violate campaign finance law. That's what Bragg is trying to do. He's trying to jump through hurdles to say that, well, this payment helped him politically, and therefore it's a violation of election campaign law. So Stormy takes the stage, and it went off the rails quickly. And I read some summaries of her testimony, and just a couple of things I just wanted to point out. Now, she owes Donald Trump $600,000 in attorney's fees because she had sued Donald Trump previously for defamation. And that case went nowhere, and the courts came in and said, look, you got to pay Donald Trump $600,000 in attorney's fees. And you know what she said? I'm not paying it. She sat up on the stand and said, there's no way I'm paying this. I don't care if the courts tell me to pay this $600,000 to Trump. I'm not paying it. So she's defying the courts. So you think she's going to be a truthful witness if she already has no respect for the courts? The other thing that came out is that she's doing this for the money. She was clear about it. Now, here's the interesting thing. The judge, Marchand, he gave strict guidelines on what can be discussed, and it quickly went off the rails. Stormy started talking about how she spanked Donald Trump. And then when they asked that, well, what kind of sex did you have? She did a semi-spread eagle up on the stand, or implied that that's the kind of sex that they had. It's just all sorted. And again, it's just get Trump. And the prosecution kept on prompting her to get more and more sorted. And it's just an unbelievable story. She claims that when she went up to visit Donald Trump, he was in pajamas. And the first thing she said, oh, get out of your pajamas, get change. Came back. And he was dressed in regular clothes. And then later when she went to the bathroom, she came back out. And Donald Trump was dressed, took his clothes off. He was dressed down to his skivvies. I mean, to me, this just does not seem believable. And then what was really interesting is this rabbit-eared judge. During all this testimony, what was important to him? He heard Donald Trump sigh under his breath, BS. And again, he threatened Donald Trump with contempt. During all this sort of stuff that was not supposed to be talked about, Trump's defense, they said, wait a second, they objected. You weren't supposed to allow this kind of talk. And the judge let it go on. And it's become a problem for the judge because he may have put himself in a position where he has to call for a mistrial because of what he did. He allowed this Stormy Daniels testimony to go off the rails because it has nothing to do with the case. So the judge was going to get cute and say, oh, we'll let them talk about some things that really smears Donald Trump, but we can't go too far because then it puts me in a position where there may be a mistrial. But this judge's hatred for Trump let it go. So now it puts Trump in a position that he can get a mistrial, and it's going to help him on appeal if he gets convicted. And let's go over a couple of my observations resulting from the second day of Stormy Daniels' testimony. And here's what I found really interesting. The first one is that Stormy Daniels made over $1 million selling her Donald Trump story to various media outlets. Over $1 million. She's been on Anderson Cooper. She's been on Jimmy Kimmel. And throughout all of this, occasionally she would say, oh, she slept with Donald Trump. And then she would say she didn't sleep with Donald Trump. So she's all over the place on this. Again, it's all about the money for her. She'll say whatever makes her the most amount of money. And then the Trump team came out with two letters signed by her saying, I did not have an affair with Donald Trump. Two letters signed by her. She admitted it. And then she went on to say, oh, my attorney told me to do this. Every excuse in the book, but it was her signature. She willingly and knowingly signed these letters that said she had no affair with Donald Trump. Now, the third thing, and I'm not surprised by this, the Trump people petitioned the judge to throw the case out, mistrial, based on the previous day's testimony by Daniels. And not surprisingly, the judge said, no, We're going to move on. But this puts Donald Trump's team in a good position in the event that he loses this case. He can appeal this and this travesty of justice. And quite frankly, I think an appeals court is going to look favorably on the Trump position because this was an absolute mess yesterday. Prosecution and the judge should be ashamed of themselves. Okay, so that's up in New York. Now let's take a quick jaunt down to Atlanta with Fannie Willis. So in the Fannie Willis case, the appeals court, the state appeals court, said that they are going to take up Trump's petition to remove Fannie Willis from the case. And I'm not sure when that's going to be heard, but it certainly is delaying the case, which really hinders it. Very, very much a good chance that this case won't start before the election. And the other thing with Fannie Willis is that the Georgia State Senate asked her to testify before one of their committees because they're investigating her. And you know what Fannie did? She refused to go because the law doesn't apply to her. It applies to everyone else. And this is the mindset that we have with many, many judges and many, many prosecutors throughout this country today. They're all political hacks, and they think they're above everyone else. So now that these cases are going kaput, lawfare is going kaput for the Democrats and the Joe Biden administration. So they're twisting now their attacks on Trump to be, oh, he's undemocratic. If he gets elected, he's not going to leave. He's going to make himself a dictator. And that's what their spin is right now because they know they're not winning this lawfare. So they got to create something else. And it's that Trump is not going to leave office if he's reelected, when he's reelected. And you talk about conspiracies. Next to the Russia hoax, this is the biggest conspiracy that's come out of Washington against Donald Trump. And they love to talk about MAGA being conspiracy theorists. They love to talk about anyone that opposes them as conspiracy theorists. Well, this is a big conspiracy. So we shall see. Oh, just a couple of other observations before I forget. One is Matt Colangelo. Now, Colangelo is one of the high-ranking Department of Justice attorneys that went down to New York to help the Bragg case, to help resurrect the Bragg case against Donald Trump. Well, we have just come to find out that Colangelo was paid $12,000 by the DNC for political consulting. And we also find out that one of the other prosecutors that on the Bragg team made some significant donations to the Democrat Party. Can it be any obvious that we've seen the merger of politics and justice here?
It's also true right now, Mr. President, that voters by a wide margin trust Trump more on the economy. They say that in polls. And part of the reason for that may be the numbers. And you're aware of many of these, of course. The cost of buying a home in the United States is double what it was when you look at your monthly costs from before the pandemic. Real income, when you account for inflation, is actually down since you took office. Economic growth last week, far short of expectations. Consumer confidence, maybe no surprise, is near a two-year low. With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
We've already turned it around.
And that was Joe Biden being interviewed by Aaron Burnett of CNN. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through this interview and I'm going to point out his lies. Even when given softball questions by Burnett, he still has to lie in order to get through the interview. Now, the first thing I want to point out is that he thinks he's already turned things around regarding the economy. He thinks everything's good. He thinks everything's great. And when the president of the United States thinks everything is great, when the man on the street is struggling, when most Americans are struggling because of his policies, how can you vote for this guy? So let's go back to the next clip.
If you look at the Michigan survey, for 65% of American people think they're in good shape economically. They think the nation's not in good shape, but they're personally in good shape.
And Biden's being misleading here. I don't think the Michigan survey is a poll of people's financial well-being. It's an index. Well, guess what? The index came out this morning. And let me read a headline from CNBC. It says, consumer sentiment tumbles as inflation fears surge. The University of Michigan survey for May posted an initial reading of 67.4% for the month, down from 77.2% in April, and well off the consensus view of 76. The move represented a decline of 12.7%. Its one-year inflation outlook jumped to 3.5%, up 0.3 percentage points from a month ago, and the highest level since November 2023. And it's confounding these so-called experts. The report comes despite the stock market riding a strong rally and gasoline prices nudging lower, though still at elevated rates. Most labor market signals remain solid, though jobless claims last week hit their highest level since late August. The magnitude of the slump in confidence is pretty big and isn't satisfactorily explained by it, by geopolitical factors or the mid-April stock market sell-off, said Paul Ashworth, chief North America economist at Capital Economics. That leaves us with wondering if we're missing something more worrying going on with the consumer. And they just don't get it. The consumer is strapped. Credit card debt is at record levels. I saw a report where the average credit card debt for the United States is over $6,000. And in states like New Jersey, the average debt is $8,000 for credit cards. Now you take a look at what you're paying in interest costs by carrying that kind of balance at 29%. That's a massive amount to pay every month. People are being forced to refinance their homes in order to pay their bills. Last week's report on new refinancing was up 5% over the previous week. And that's in high interest rate environments. Do you think people are going to refinance their homes at high interest rates unless they're forced to? Unless they're forced to pay their bills with it? But again, Biden and his rogues gallery, they just don't get it. Let's go to the next clip.
The idea that we're in a situation where things are so bad, the folks, we've created more jobs. We're in a situation where people have access to good paying jobs.
And Biden's being misleading. Now, most of these jobs that came back under the Biden administration were just jobs that were lost during the pandemic, when most states, I would say, closed down. And let's take a look at the type of jobs that have been created under Joe Biden. Majority of these jobs are part-time jobs, many which have been going to illegal migrants. If you take a look at the Biden administration and the jobs created, full-time jobs have been lost. There's a net negative effect of full-time jobs being created under the Biden administration. Let's go to the next clip.
No president's had the run we've had in terms of creating jobs and bringing down inflation. It was 9% when I came to office. 9%. But look, people have a right to be concerned.
Now, this is a flat-out lie. Inflation hit 9.1% under his watch, under his administration. He did not inherit 9.1%. So let's go to the next clip.
We have the strongest economy in the world. Let me say it again, in the world.
Although GDP last week was far short of expectations.
Oh, it wasn't. Look, GDP is still growing. Look at the response of the markets. Overwhelmingly positive.
And that's not saying much, Joe. Because a good chunk of the world's economy is either a recession or very slow. So you're the king of a anthill. That's what you're saying. And then Burnett comes back and says, well, first quarter GDP was only 1.6%, well below expectations and well below Q4 2023. And Joe comes back, well, look at the stock market. The stock market responded very good to this. Well, Joe, you don't realize there's been a disconnect between the stock market and the underlying American economy for years. So the stock market, other than the wealth effect, makes people feel that they're richer. There's nothing about the stock market today that relates to the underlying economy. And that's a problem that has to be addressed in the future, because there's so-called arrogance that's taken over the Wall Street and the stock market right now. You got some of these Wall Street economists saying the financial markets is the economy. Well, that doesn't make me feel good, and it shouldn't make you feel good. And here's another thing that shouldn't make you feel good. And I'm going to play a clip with Jared Bernstein. He's Joe Biden's chief economic advisor. And he's being interviewed, I think, for a documentary on money, the concept of money. And he struggles with the concept of money, or what is money. So I want to go to this clip, and that clip's going to be followed with a analysis by Monica Crowley. And this is taken from Fox News. But here's what is really dangerous about this deep state, this Biden administration. It's not what you know. It's all about ideology, and it's all about where you stand politically. Now, Bernstein, he's got a PhD in social work. He's got a master's and a PhD in social work. Not economics. But it doesn't matter to these people, because it's all about whether you will be a political hack for them. And I've always said, these people in Washington, they're not very smart people. They're able to parrot things. They don't understand things. And Bernstein here is a perfect example. So let's go to this clip.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets... some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds, and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so. A lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money, and then it uses that money to, I guess I can't really talk, I don't get it, I don't know what they're talking about.
Monica, that's Jared Bernstein. He is the White House's chief economic advisor. It's almost funny, but it's not, that this is the man that's given advice on the economy to Joe Biden.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this clip a couple of days ago. It's absolutely terrifying and horrifying all at the same time. This is the president of the United States, his top economic advisor, and he doesn't know basic fundamentals about how the government prints money, how it borrows money. I mean, these are basics. Like, you could ask an eighth grader and they would know more than what Mr. Bernstein demonstrated here.
And Crowley's right. It's concerning. And Bernstein is talking about modern monetary theory. This is the insane policy that these economists in the Biden administration want to pursue. Deficits don't matter. Debt doesn't matter. And these are the people that are advising Biden on this. And with that said, thank you very much for listening. You have a good week, and I will talk to you next Saturday.